Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Tuesday. It is June 16th, 2026. Hope your day is going well so far and that you have a great day. Thanks be to God and God willing. We have a great show for you. As always, we do our best to keep you connected, what's happening in the community, the church, and the world. Coming up this morning for the first hour, if you recall, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe. Time flies. I'm telling you, it goes by so fast, the older you get. We had a great session with Dr. John Cuddeback, and he is a philosopher, he's a theologian, he's a professor. He is a college instructor for some 30 years at the wonderful Christendom College. And his latest book is The Intentional Household, Living as If People Matter, and 8 principles that families can do to be intentional in the home. So the first interview was kind of an overview of the book. We talked about a lot of different issues. And being that we are in this week entering into, of course, Father's Day, and day number 2 of the show this week, we've already had 2 big conversations yesterday with Dr. Jennifer Robeck Morris from the Ruth Institute and Bill Donahue from the Catholic League, all about fatherhood, the attacks on fatherhood, and of course the situations that are developing, although not as much with so-called Pride Month. But I thought it would be great to have John really dive deeply into these principles in terms of families and how important it is to embrace these to make sure your family is doing well, especially in the relationship with the Lord. So that will be the first hour of the program, at least starting at 15 minutes past the hour. We'll have 3 sessions, or segments, I should say, with Dr. John, so that'll be great. And then in hour number 2, we are going to be talking about authentic Catholic education in the age of AI. Nicholas Sens is with the theology department and the chair of Colby Academy, which is a homeschool academy. And we will take a look at that. That'll be exciting. And then we're also going to be talking to Chris McCarty about a beautiful event that is coming up. And that is, of course, happening at the Shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament, all about adoration. What a great topic to discuss. And if you've never been to the Shrine in Hanceville, please, the next time you get to Irondale, maybe you're doing a tour of our wonderful campus. That is awesome to see Master Control, to walk through the studios, to meet the great people on camera behind the scenes. Everybody makes you feel like family because you are. But take some time to go to the Shrine. It's a whole different world. And it's such a peaceful, beautiful place. And by the way, the bookstore is amazing. I'm just saying. Okay. So that's the program for today. 2 hours. The first one right here on EWTN's, of course, Catholic Radio, our radio network. And then second hour on EWTN Radio Extra. What's coming up in the weather? Well, lots of problems. We'll have more on this in the news. The National Weather Service is still talking about heavy rainfall across the southern part of Texas and lots of heat in the west. They're now saying excessive rainfall could produce locally considerable flash flooding over parts of the southern part of the Lone Star State, the western Gulf Coast, and lower Mississippi River Valley. And that is all the way through Thursday. They're also saying hot temperatures will persist over central and northern California and the Pacific Northwest, and that is through the rest of the day today. It is a Tuesday. We appreciate your listenership here at EWTN. Don't forget to check out all of our great resources, and you can start by just going to EWTN.com. 3 minutes past the hour on a Tuesday, June 16th, time to check the news for you here at EWTN. President Trump is in France, but speaking out on efforts to end the war with Iran.
We have our deal done with Iran, and it should be successful. It goes to a second stage, which I think will be actually easier.
Following a meeting with the leaders of Qatar on the sidelines of the G7 summit in France today, the president telling reporters that the U.S. would not be investing in Iran, despite what he called a rumor that got out there yesterday. He said the most important part of the deal is that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. Exact details of the agreement have yet to be made public, but according to reports, it will open the Strait of Hormuz and open a 30-day window to strike a long-term deal. The U.S. military, meanwhile, is planning to maintain its current presence in the Middle East as officials negotiate with Iran. According to reports from the Hill, a senior Trump administration official saying, "We hope to draw them down, but we're not going to do that yet." The official explained the administration wants to see the Iranians keep their promises and added the agreement contemplates a reduction of military forces in the region upon the agreement of a final deal. The comments allow news of an electronically signed memorandum of understanding between President Trump and Vice President Vance on the U.S. side and Iranian leaders on their side. And it was revealed yesterday that the FBI thwarted an explosives drone attack against Sunday's Freedom 250 event on the White House South Lawn, and they've already taken five suspects into custody. The multi-phase terror attack allegedly involved using explosives-laden drone aircraft to strike buildings in the vicinity of the event, sparking mass panic and driving a fleeing crowd toward a sniper team poised to pick them off. That's what officials told Fox News Digital. And a second wave of attackers then allegedly planning to storm the White House gate. The Bureau learned of the plot on June 10th and executed a search warrant in Cincinnati, where the first arrest was made, and some of the alleged suspects traveled to Virginia on June 12th or 13th to make preparations for the attack. Eight people are dead after a B-52 bomber crashed at Edwards Air Force Base in California. The base said it happened shortly after the aircraft took off yesterday for a routine test mission. While the cause of the crash remains under investigation, Colonel James Hayes, deputy commander for the 412th Test Wing, telling a news conference, "We lost eight great Americans." Vatican News is reporting today that the Holy Father met with representatives of the United States Jewish Appeal Federation of New York on Monday in Rome. He thanked the organization to work for help to help vulnerable populations. And as Deborah Castellano-Luboff reports, he also stressed that in a world still wounded by division and conflict, we are still called to move beyond past misunderstandings toward collaboration for the common good.
Recognizing the inherent dignity of all men and women, Nostra Aetate took a firm stand against anti-Semitism and declared that the Church rejects all forms of discrimination or harassment because of race, color, condition of life, or religion.
Pope Leo XIV gave this reminder when meeting with the representatives of the United Jewish Appeal Federation of New York on Monday morning in the Vatican. The organization's humanitarian efforts, Pope Leo said, reflect a clear recognition of human dignity and fraternity, resonating with the Church's own commitment to integral human development and the call to love our neighbor. He recalled that this shared commitment carries special meaning in light of the common history of Christians and Jews and their spiritual ancestry in Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. The Holy Father pointed to the 1965 landmark document of the Second Vatican Council, the Declaration Nostra Aetate, on the relation of the Church to non-Christian religions, whose 60th anniversary the Church celebrated last year. The Pope said it opened up a new horizon of encounter, respect, and spiritual hospitality, and affirmed, among other things, the truth that we belong to one human family. He recalled how it condemned anti-Semitism and discrimination.
In a world still wounded by division and conflict,
Pope Leo emphasized,
it called us to move beyond past misunderstandings toward collaboration for the common good.
With this sentiment, Pope Leo went on to describe service to the poor, marginalized, and powerless as a means of encountering the sacred, noting that, through them, the divine voice continues to speak to us. As the Holy Father drew his address to a close, he thanked those before him for their dedication to assisting the poor and needy, for confronting hatred and intolerance, and working to build a better world for all.
May your mission strengthen dialogue, deepen mutual understanding, and contribute to the peace so greatly needed in our world.
I'm Deborah Castellano-Luboff.
The Vatican also releasing the Holy Father's message for the 6th World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly to be held on the 4th Sunday of July on the theme, "I Will Never Forget You," based on the verse from Isaiah 49:15. Through the prophet Isaiah, the Lord promises he will never forget any of us. He assures us that he has engraved our faces in the palms of his hands, and that is from Isaiah again 49:16, and that his love is greater than a mother's love for her child. The Holy Father acknowledging that quite a few elderly share the painful feeling of being forgotten, especially as they experience loneliness or sometimes being reduced to a bed number or illness. The Holy Father adding that the celebration of the World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly is an opportunity to rediscover that the Church is called to be a mother to all at any age, and it's always possible to recognize ourselves as sons and daughters of God. The Holy Father also inviting everyone, especially the young, to revive the beautiful custom of visiting their grandparents, elderly relatives, and even those who have no one to visit them. Bring them through this message and your presence, the closeness and affection of the Pope, he said as he called on loved ones to offer their grandparents and their elderly relatives a tender and affectionate encounter. Sam Brock tells us that a barrage of severe storms is expected to hit millions across the Midwest and Northwest this week, and it comes after the region already experienced a weekend of some pretty wild weather.
Heavy rain and hail coming down hard, cars trying to make it to safety through the storm. Down trees and power lines littering the streets, and rain also wreaking havoc in Texas, the water rising quickly on the roads, flash floods trapping cars.
The latest weather threat expected to start tomorrow with gusty winds and hail set to hit parts of Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. Chicago, Indianapolis, and Detroit are among the cities that might be affected. Later in the week, the severe weather threat expected to move on the East Coast into New York City, Washington, and other East Coast locations. And the National Hurricane Center says the first named tropical storm of the season could be brewing. The agency says a disturbance over northeastern Mexico has a 50% chance of development over the next week. Once it moves over the Gulf later today or Wednesday, environmental conditions slightly favor its development, and the system is expected to move east toward Louisiana. If it becomes a tropical storm late tomorrow or Thursday, it will be named Arthur. Accused CEO killer Luigi Mangione will be back in a New York City courtroom today for another hearing. This after news came that the judge in the case held a secret hearing earlier this month without any explanation. No reason has been given today for the hearing. Mangione is charged in the murder of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson on a New York City sidewalk back in 2024. He is set to go on state trial September 8th. A federal trial is set for next year. Wendy Swanson tells us Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell is still in the hospital.
A statement from McConnell's office says he was admitted on Sunday morning and, quote, is receiving excellent care. The reason for his hospitalization and his current condition are still both unknown. The 84-year-old Republican has represented Kentucky in the U.S. Senate since 1984. I'm Wendy Swanson.
Another big primary day today. Voting takes place today in Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Washington, D.C. President Trump's political muscle is being tested, including in Georgia's Senate race, where he gave a last-minute endorsement to GOP Congressman Mike Collins over former football coach Derek Dooley in their primary runoff. In Alabama's Republican Senate primary runoff, Trump-backed Congressman Barry Moore faces Navy SEAL Jared Hudson. And in Washington, primaries are being held for a mayor and a new non-voting delegate to Congress. And the chief engineer of that cargo ship that caused the collapse of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge has now been charged. He's facing a federal charge of violating the Ports and Waterways Safety Act. A deferred prosecution agreement has been reached. That means a charge could be dismissed if he complies with certain terms. Prosecutors allege he knowingly and willingly failed to notify the U.S. Coast Guard about hazardous conditions before the 2024 collapse that killed six road workers. In May, an unsealed indictment revealed criminal against the ship's owner and operator. It is 13 minutes past the hour. More Catholic Connection coming your way, all about the family. Great topic for Father's Day week. We'll be right back. So excited to spend the next 45 minutes with Dr. John Cuddeback. He returns to Catholic Connection on a Tuesday morning, this week of Father's Day, coming up, of course, this weekend. His book is The Intentional Household, Living as If People Matter, 8 Principles That Families Can Do to Be Intentional in the Home. Dr. Cuddeback has been a professor of philosophy at Christendom College for 30 years. He lectures and writes on how to live the good life, and his first book, True Friendship, and his new book, The Intentional Household, both published by our friends at Ignatius Press. Dr. John, great to have you back on the program, and the Lord's timing is always perfect. Before we dive into the 8 principles, which we didn't have time to address last time you were on because I had so many questions for you, I just wanted to get your take on families as they relate to fatherhood, being that this week we celebrate Father's Day. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Teresa. Thanks so much. Great to be back. I love the timing, too. I absolutely do. I have to say, I really am convinced that in God's great plan that we always need to rediscover, the Father just plays such a beautiful central role. The evil one knows that, and as we know, the masculinity and fatherhood has been so directly and subtly attacked, and so reordering things, restoring things, is especially going to happen through men recognizing the astounding gift of their place in the home. And so I love just taking any opportunity, Father's Day, such a great one, to look again at the great gift and challenge we've got here.
Are we getting any better at this? I know you wrote this book because our families still need a lot of help, but do you think we're recognizing some of the damage that we've done already?
I think we are. And the beautiful thing is that is always the first step. As Socrates says, the worst ignorance is when you don't know what you don't know. And I think nature has been speaking here. And so I take great encouragement from the fact that more and more, again, just focusing on the men for a moment, they're recognizing they haven't had the kind of relationship with their fathers often that they so needed. And so in any case, they're asking themselves, what can we do different in our marriage, in our household, in our fathering? And that's a great sign of hope. So they're asking, are we getting better? Well, you know, certainly some places we are, but we've got a lot of work to do, and so let's lean into it.
Start with the eight principles. We didn't get this last time, and I'm really excited to talk to you about them. Okay, you have eight principles, John, that families can do to be intentional in the home. Number one.
Make household making a priority. I think it begins with kind of a new approach, recognizing this astounding reality, this gift of household has been in many ways taken away from us. Those things that, as you know, again, from your great Italian heritage there, things that just a couple generations ago could be taken for granted, can't be now. Mm-hmm. So we need to rethink the big picture. Again, especially men, but it's going on. It's just, it's wonderful complementarity, right? We've looked down our nose at women who are homemakers. We have honored men and told them they're great when they go out there and do great things out there when they're completely leaving behind the home. And so we need to rethink what are men and women especially supposed to be doing in their adult life, in their prime years.
Do we even know what we're supposed to be doing now?
That's the thing.
Do you think?
I don't think we do. An important point, you know, we have a sense that we need to rediscover something, but then we need some help looking. That's why I like to turn to the ancients. I like to turn to great authors throughout the Christian tradition, right up to the present day, who are pointing at, isn't this always the way it is in life? God's gifts are right there. They're so easy to miss, and so. But sometimes we just have to. It's that turning again. It's that time for renewal. What is the gift of? It's written into our nature that we need to eat several times a day, that we need the kind of personal contact, especially when we're young, right? The special needs of the young and of the old. These are things that point out the reality of the nature of household and what the life there should look like, but we're going to have to look carefully.
I think it doesn't have to be too complicated, though. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, getting back to making household making a priority, that could be having dinner together more than, you know, once a week, and as opposed to grabbing, you know, fast food, sit down and have something at the dinner table, even if you have a carryout, to sit down and do that together, or make something with your kids on a Sunday morning, make the pancakes or the scrambled eggs, or just get together and do something in the home. It doesn't have, sometimes we just think we have to do all these fancy things, right?
Amen. I completely agree. And the good news is, it really, as the principles get a little bit more specific as they go. But I like to say, you know, I write it down. Hey, I'm a philosophy professor. I like to start at 50,000 feet, And I think that's how we work as the rational creatures we are. I'd like to start with kind of that idea, and reminding people we need to begin by thinking in terms of making household making a priority is where we're going to start. Then we're looking. Then we're ready to say, okay, well, what do we do next? Then we're in the zone, and we recognize, exactly as you just said, Teresa, it's going to be in the little things. But we're not going to notice those little things, I think, unless we're really tuned in and looking for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're continuing our discussion this morning on Catholic Connection here in EWTN with Dr. John Cuddeback and his brilliant book, The Intentional Household, Living as If People Matter. Sometimes we don't live, I love that subtitle, because sometimes we don't live as people matter because we're so connected to our technology. So number one, making the household making a priority. Okay, what's principle number two?
Take responsibility for life in your home. And I italicize the term responsibility there because I think it's a beautiful one that, again, just I think people are recognizing what has happened to the sense of responsibility, the practice of responsibility. And my approach here is it's no wonder our young people don't have a sense of responsibility because we haven't taken responsibility for giving them the life they need in our homes. And if they don't experience someone taking responsibility for them and all the beautiful, the simple aspects of their life, they won't really know what responsibility is. What is responsibility if it's not a man and a woman who are married say, I'm going to first take care of you, my spouse, and this home we're crafting together, and lean into crafting our whole thing here in view of this astounding gift to the children. So it's really the emphasis there. It's just a natural progression from making household making a priority. It's just getting a little bit more specific. We're going to have to literally take responsibility for this because if things aren't going the way they should be in our home, that's because we're not doing something. It's not because someone else isn't doing something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Amen. More with Dr. John Cuddeback. He's with us for the entire 9 o'clock hour, Eastern Time, of course, here on Catholic Connection, diving deeply into his book, The Intentional Household, Living as If People Matter. And we're diving into the 8 principles that families can do to be intentional in the home. Great discussion, especially with Father's Day coming up. We'll be right back. Hope you're having a great morning, Catholic Connection, EWTN's production, Monday through Friday. Great to be with you and great to have a very special guest back with us, Dr. John A. Cuddeback, professor of philosophy at Christendom College for 30 years, lectures and writes on how to live the good life, of course, first and foremost with our relationship with God and then with each other. His first book, True Friendship, and his latest book, as we just mentioned, The Intentional Household, both published by our friends at Ignatian Press. So, of course, you can find that at ignatiuspress.com or also on our EWTN religious catalog, EWTN.rc. You talked about responsibility, and as a reporter, my mind always goes to news stories and breaking news stories, and I couldn't help but think about responsibility or lack thereof when we look out, Doctor, at big stories that are making news. And it's been very, I think, traumatic to watch some of the response to the verdict in the Metcalf case and the Carmelo Anthony, who was convicted and sentenced to 35 years for the stabbing death of that young man down in Texas. And there doesn't seem to be a sense of responsibility because in the case, if you followed it at all, the suspect was black and the victim was white, but there were both African-American and white witnesses that testified to what happened, and there was some pretty heavy evidence showing what occurred. And yet there were a lot of people claiming that this wasn't fair and it was based on racism, not a young man acting inappropriately and hurting and killing another. Does responsibility, if it isn't in the home, does it spill out into society?
I really think that is the point. So much in God's plan of the basic dispositions of us human persons is what happens in the home. Especially, by that plan, we're watching our parents. And in many ways, it's implicit. It's not conscious. But responsible parents, and responsible in the most important ways. There, I really think it's key to see there can be a kind of responsibility that people take that's really more of a self-centered one. Well, I'm really ambitious. I'm going to make it out there in the normal terms of success. But that's not responsibility in the deep sense, which is really about taking care of people. I'm going to end up being irresponsible in taking care of people if all I ever think about is myself. So I think it's also very much it's the me generation thing, Teresa. So that's undermined really our thinking clearly at all about holding people responsible and all the wonderful obligations that we have towards others, which of course is what households all about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so that was number two, taking responsibility. Number one, getting back to making the household a priority. All right, your third principle mentioned in your new book.
Make good work in and of the home the context for mutual belonging and living responsibly together. So it's all about good work.
Okay, explain.
Well, by God's design, something that we've missed, something that we didn't recognize, that the normal, ordinary aspects of the work that it takes to support human life that always was done in the household, we didn't realize that by God's loving design, that was the most normal, natural context for people to grow in responsibility, take responsibility, and live in relationship with one another. Spouses working together, parents and children working together. Where does that most happen? It happens in the home. Home is no longer a place of work. Big picture, post-industrial revolution, the work moved out of the homes. And it's progressing. More and more, we don't even have the leftovers of work that were at home. Well, normally, people still cooked their meals, even though they were doing all their other work away from home. Now, even that is not really being done. And we're realizing something huge is missing. It's in many ways, I think, the great key to this whole project. And it's something in our hands, but we're going to have to be savvy about it. How do we bring good work back into the daily life as in the home?
Does that mean getting children involved in more activities in the home? I'm not just talking about fun activities where they can, bake, cookies or cupcakes with the parents or sit down and play a game. I'm talking about the functioning of the home when they're old enough to do so.
I think so, Teresa. Most people have seen, anyone who has knows from experience, that the feeling, the look that comes over a child when that child was given some task, invited into the work that's meaningful work that has to do in some way with the life of the family, succeeds in it, is given affirmation. You can't put into words the experience of belonging. I belong here. I am a part. I can contribute. The work that I do is valued. It's how we live together. Those things, the child might not be able to say any of that. That's the experience, and it's profoundly formative.
Yeah. I mean, even if you let the kids, I get a kick out of this with my grandnieces, the twins, identical twins, are going to be 10 in September. The baby is 5. But they love setting the table. They love, when people come over for dinner, they're very involved in that. And they like to, even if they don't set the table perfectly, it's something that they do because it's a way of welcoming and then being involved in that dinner event.
Amen. Amen. And that's something that's being they're being gently but intentionally directed to by their parents. Mm-hmm. And again, it's sometimes it's just implicit, but this is part of our intentionality because these things that would have been so normal now, the parents of your grandniece are saying to themselves, all right, how are we going to involve the children? Maybe it was pattern for them, but for most of us, it is that we're going to have to choose that. Okay. How are we going to involve our children and give them that oh-so-human experience that your grandnieces are having?
So the responsibility then and making good work, that goes with, I would think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm thinking of discipline, because without discipline and boundaries, none of that can be all that effective, I would think.
Amen. Amen. And it's the natural context for that too. Imagine a child who really feels part of the program. I'm part of what we do around here. I'm trusted. I am involved in these things. Then when it comes to those more tricky aspects of discipline, there's this broader context for it versus the kind of extreme opposite of that. Just kind of picture, I'm saying, from a dad's perspective, dad parachutes in, he's been gone, which is, again, understandable, but you know, the children aren't really feeling a part of things, but they need to be given direction. We give them correction. It more feels coming out of nowhere rather than as part of that shared context.
Yeah. There's so many interesting stories I have from my childhood and my mom. I'll have to share one with you when I come back about post-Raisin Bran and Bobby Sherman. You remember Bobby Sherman, the pop star? I don't know if you remember him or not.
I don't. I remember the Raisin Bran, but you got to tell me the story, though.
Well, Bobby Sherman was on Here Come the Brides, and it's a funny story, but it's typical of an Italian mom when they want to get your attention when they do something, and it worked. So I'm going to tell you that story when we come back. But I want to remind people with whom we're speaking. We're having a great conversation with Dr. John Cutaback. I specifically wanted him back on because he had so many questions. His book is excellent. What I love about it is it's so simple, but it's so deep in the sense of we look all over the place for all these different solutions. You know, it's right in front of our faces sometimes, getting back to basics. So the book, again, if you're just tuning in, is The Intentional Household, Living as If People Matter. There's a concept, 8 principles that families can do to be intentional in the home. So far, we're doing pretty well, Doc. We've gotten through 3. Making household, making a priority is number 1. Number 2, taking responsibility. Number 3, making good work. We'll continue talking about that with my little story, but then we'll try to plow through the other 5 principles because they're all great. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning. It's June 16th. Stay tuned. I can't believe we're on the final segment already with Dr. John Cutaback. His terrific book, The Intentional Household, Living as If People Matter, including 8 principles that families can do to be intentional in the home. We've gotten through 3 of them. The last one was, we had take responsibility as number 2 and then making good work at home. So, Doc, we were chatting during the break and tying this all in with discipline and boundaries. So my mom, Rosie, was a real disciplinarian, and she was more the strict one, and my father was kind of a softy. And he would always support my mom, but, you know, he had a little bit more of a softer way of dealing with things. She was very direct, very Italian, from Jersey City, New Jersey. My father was too, but she was the strong one, really strong when it came to discipline. So one time when we were shopping, grocery shopping, had a big crush on the pop star Bobby Sherman, and I saw this advertisement that post-Raisin Bran was going to put one of his 45s, flimsy sample of a record, on the back of the cereal box. And so when we were grocery shopping, I stuck it in the bottom of the cart, and it made it by the cashier. She rang it up, and when my mother found out, she made sure I ate every drop, every flake of that Raisin Bran cereal, because the lesson was not to waste money, not to waste food. You got your record. You didn't ask me. You snuck it in. There are consequences. You must eat the Raisin Bran. I never forgot that my whole life.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, there's so much wisdom right there. And so often it does come back to being connected with food and, and an appropriate kind of respect, honoring of it is so such a deep part of human nature. And that's just so great. You know that's coming from that aspect of don't waste food. I mean, there's generations of beauty behind that.
Well, they were very poor when they were growing up on the East Coast when the family came over as immigrants from Italy, and nobody wasted food. The Italians, the Polish, they used everything in their meals, and, you know, the Irish made the most of everything. And there was a lesson. I didn't think of it that way. I wanted the record. I had a crush on Bobby Sherman, but she made me look at the bigger picture and what was more important. And I think that definitely is an art, you know, that people have lost. Okay, number 4 in the principal zone. What are we looking at next?
Enact real leisure as the heart of life in the home. It's the other side of the coin of work. It's the other thing that we've lost. I like to kind of call this genus of activities porch time. There's so many different versions of porch time. There are these times of plenitude. They're so key in life that nobody is making for us today that we're going to have to carve out.
And do you know that, and you know this because you've done a ton of research, but there's so many interesting studies on how important this leisure is, and not to take work with you, and to even have some leisure built into every single day.
Amen. And the wisdom of our God, who demands rest, and this means rest in both the simple sense and in that richer, deeper sense of the time of plenitude, one day a week is kind of a sign of likewise, exactly. There needs to be that little period or two, in any case, in each day. But God has commanded us, of course, for our good, as always, to set aside a day of rest, and we need to tune back in and figure out how we're going to really make that active again today.
Why are we so work-obsessed in America? Because it's very different in Europe. And, of course, you know, we live in Italy part-time, and they have no problem, especially in the small towns, still shutting down for riposo and pranzo from, like, 1:30 to 4, and then they go back to work after that for maybe an hour. But maybe they take it a little bit too far sometimes when you're trying to get something done. But the idea of slowing down and having a meal with your family is still very much a part of the culture here.
And I honestly think, even if it's not so evident now, that the proper appreciation of leisure comes from in a proper appreciation of the higher things, of spiritual goods. It is so Christian to have a sense of the slowing down and stopping. Why are you slowing down and stopping? To tune into people. This is why it's living as if people matter. And the higher aspects of human life. When we're becoming more materialist, when we don't have faith in the higher calling of man, you tend to be left with work because, well, what do you do when you're sitting on the porch? You're not making any kind of material progress, as it were. So this is deeply connected to our faith that we lean into our rich leisure.
Okay, so number five, we're getting there with three more to go. Number five?
Channel technology to the real good of the household.
There's a concept. Okay, great.
Yeah. So in a sense, this one kind of fits with all, bearing all the others in mind. How are we going to make a plan and execute it in both negative ways and positive ways as regards our technology? What are we going to say no to? What are we going to say yes to? Because we know what we're trying to do. And I particularly connect that to the two before it of work and leisure. Because it's work and leisure especially that technology can undermine. If always just a machine is doing it, or someone else's machine, then we're not going to have good work. Or if we're always turning to canned entertainment, we're not going to have good leisure. So we have to reckon with how technology, common forms of it, have been undermining those good forms of work and leisure.
What do you think of the UK just announcing yesterday that they're banning social media for, I think it's 16 and under, certain websites are certain that there's a big move to really cut back on social media. I had a story about that yesterday in my news. Australia has done it, now Great Britain, other countries are looking at the same thing. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I think thank God human nature is always speaking. And we still have some care and concern for our children, and it finally is kind of breaking through. No, we can't just do this. We can't let this be pushed upon our young people or any of us. So it's a good sign of at times we are recognizing God's plan, and let's do something different. But we as Christians, we've got the alternative. At the end of the day, I don't know how those measures are going to succeed if you don't have something beautiful and positive to give to the children. What else are they going to do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And human nature, you can see it everywhere. It always rises to the surface. I mean, I love watching children because no matter where you are in the world, they're the same. They just love to run. They love to play. They love to laugh and engage with each other. And to get out and do something like that versus holding a phone or watching a television, I think is so much more productive in so many ways. Okay, number six of the principles.
Friendship between spouses.
That's
just such beautiful topic that so often, I've made this, I speak from experience, concerned for my children, focusing on what to do with my children, and finally, someone helped tune me in. The best thing you can do for your child, your children, is to work on your relationship with your spouse. It's such a simple thing, but are we really thinking intentionally about how we are deepening and growing our relationship as husband and wife?
Okay, we have two more, and we have about 6 minutes. I think we can do it. Number seven.
But number seven is prioritizing forming children in the old sense, the Greek sense, the term paideia, which was the whole way you form the young to be good human persons. And it's going through different aspects of how that's kind of been taken away from us, that more we're just empowering them to do what they want to do, and rather realize we, in God's plan, have been given the wisdom, the insight, the principles, and we need to be arranging everything about life in the home to be conveying that to them.
There was a study that came out, I think it was it 2 weeks ago, I had in a newscast, in terms of how young people are still being impacted by the isolation from COVID. And I think this is a real problem still in terms of forming children. The isolation and not having the proper forming with their friends and even with their families, that is still, I think, lingering, is it not?
I'm absolutely convinced it is. And of course, we're social, and we do have to have those important contacts outside the house. But I think it's interesting, Teresa, that very often that isolation would look very different than it does if there were a thriving life inside the home.
Mm-hmm.
If pulsing life, work, leisure, bodily presence would simply make all the difference there.
How did our grandparents, even our parents, make it look so easy what they did?
Well, that's very interesting that you say that. I mean, very, very good question. And we can't be discouraged. We have to trust in the Lord and recognize He's going to give us the grace in a different and more challenging situation. They didn't have some of the challenges we do. I'm not saying that they had it easily. But interestingly, that points to the very last principle, Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
Make the life in final years of the aging integral to life in the home. We have got to reintegrate the elderly into the center of our home life the best that we can.
The Holy Father just talked about that because he put out a big message for upcoming Grandparents Day in a couple of weeks and talked about including the elderly, which again is something that we saw. I mean, we saw it all the time with our grandparents. They were very involved in our lives. I think we're seeing more grandparents involved in child care in terms of helping out their adult children, but it still seems to be different than when we were growing up, is it not?
It is, and that's where we're really going to have to be savvy. We can't repeat those conditions where they tended to be just kind of more easily right there. We were in the closer communities where people tended to live closer together, and we even had still multi-generational habits of it wouldn't be kind of weird to have those aging parents there. We have to reckon with new medical needs and distance, but if we at least start with that principle, by God's design, the elderly have so much to offer us, including what they need from us. I mean, this is so divine. It's so divine that God would have it set up that as they need more from us, that's precisely a key part of how they're giving to us, and we're missing that opportunity.
There's some great quotes here that I wanted to share with you that I read in the news earlier. Pope Leo said, "The celebration of the World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly is an opportunity to rediscover that the Church is called to be a mother to all, and at any age, it's always possible to recognize ourselves as sons and daughters of God. He invited everyone, especially the young, to revive the beautiful custom of visiting their grandparents, elderly relatives, and even those who have no one to visit them." So basic, but so profound at the same time.
Wow. It is so beautiful. And here's another beautiful angle into it. It's saying no to one of the great lies and errors of our age. One of the great lies and errors of our age basically takes the form of prioritizing less important things. Mm-hmm. Success in the material realm, bodily pleasure, the things that the elderly tends to not have anymore. There was God's plan. It more, as you get older, these other things fall away, and you more have to focus on the interior life and relationships. You can't see as far. You can't run around, but you can still connect with people. That is an opportunity for us to connect with them and realize that, learn from them, lean into that. So it brings into play all of our fundamental principles. What do we think is most important in life?
Yeah. It's just so well done, John, with this, really. I mean, it's getting back to the basics, but helping people really apply it in practical ways. Again, the book we've been discussing, this is actually show number two with our guest, Dr. John Cutaback, The Intentional Household, Living As If People Matter. And, of course, we've been discussing eight principles that families can do to be intentional in the home. So I'm not going to repeat the eight principles. I want you to go by the books you can read, because there's much more detail in the book about each principle. But it's very, very good advice. How's the book doing so far?
I'm getting word of two thumbs up, I'm happy to say. So thanks so much for your kind encouragement.
Well, I love the practicality of it, because I think the older we get, we realize, what's it say in Ecclesiastes? Everything old is new again, right? I mean, we're going back to, as you said, the basics of who we are, made in the image and likeness of God, because a natural law works, and all the other stuff out there has been harmful. Anyway, thank you, John. Went by so quickly. Terrific job this morning. Great book. Dr. John A. Cutaback has been a professor of philosophy at Christendom for 30 years and has great books and lectures. And again, Ignatius.com published the latest book. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for tuning in to Catholic Connection on a Tuesday morning. Coming up in hour number two on EWTN Radio Extra, given the gospel for today about loving our enemies, and given what we discussed partially with Dr. John about the importance of responsibility and forgiveness and all of that, we're going to dive into something the Holy Father said, well, one of our previous and wonderful past popes, and that would be Pope St. John Paul II, talking about justice and forgiveness. And many people think if they forgive, then there's a lack of justice there. But his take on this, and this is from his World Day of Peace document, January 1st, 2002, no peace without justice, no justice without forgiveness. And I love the quote, and it's not an exact quote. I do have the exact quote in the document, and I'll discuss in more detail in my 2 cents segment. But he says generally, basically, this is what he's saying. Forgiveness is not the opposite of justice. Just because you forgive someone, which we must do, does not mean that someone is not going to have to deal with the responsibility of their actions. So we're going to explore that, and we're going to talk about that a little bit in 2 cents. And then we're going to talk about an authentic Catholic education in the age of AI. Nicholas Sens is going to be joining us. He's a husband and a father and serves as a pastoral associate at Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Fishers, Indiana, and holds degrees in communication studies, philosophy, and theology. And we'll talk about that with him. And then we're also going to be discussing a new event coming up at the beautiful Shrine in Hanceville. All of that in hour number two on EWTN's Radio Extra. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is the second hour of Catholic Connection on a Tuesday, June 16th, 2026. Great to be with you as we continue our Catholic programming. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk about choosing an authentic Catholic education in the age of AI. With the help of Nicholas Sens, a husband, father, and someone who serves as a pastoral associate at a parish in Indiana. And we're also going to be taking a look at the theology of course, Colby Academy and their homeschooling. So this is all tied together, which will be a great conversation. And we'll take a look at how the last class, the graduating class of 2026, did and where they're going. And regards to technology also, we'll take a look at technology. And I'm really interested in getting his opinion on the decision from Great Britain yesterday regarding the ban on social media for young people. So we'll talk about that. And then we're going to go back to the Shrine in Hanceville for another beautiful event all about adoration. So those are the two interviews coming up in this hour of Catholic Connection. Hope you can stay tuned for the rest of the program. In 2 cents, we want to take a look at the gospel for today and how we need to pray for our enemies and those who persecute us, because the rain falls, as our Lord says in today's gospel, on the just and the unjust. It's often very confusing and even very painful, if you've been wronged by someone, to move toward forgiveness. And sometimes we may feel, and I know we've all probably felt this at one time or another, that if we're forgiving, then those people are getting away with something. There is no justice if we forgive. But when you forgive, you are truly setting yourself free. And it's interesting, this point came up after all the news that came out after the Carmel Anthony verdict last week. If you remember, he was found guilty of murdering the young football player Metcalf down in Texas. It was just a really, really horrible story. No winners there at all. But the father of the victim said, I have to forgive. I'm a Christian. But he's also saying that, you know, this is what we do as Christians. But at the same time, it will give him peace. And he continues to pray for this young man who's now in prison for the next 35 years. So this whole concept of what forgiveness is, what it isn't, and John Paul II always said, forgiveness is not the opposite of justice. So we'll talk about that. And we'll play a clip with a short interview with the father of the victim in that stabbing in Texas that happened a while ago. And, of course, the case was adjudicated last week and the verdict came down. All right, weather-wise, let's take a look at what the National Weather Service is saying. They're saying heavy rainfall across South Texas and some heat in the west. Excessive rainfall could produce locally considerable flash flooding over parts of South Texas, the western Gulf Coast, and lower Mississippi River Valley through Tuesday, or actually Thursday, through today and then all the way through Thursday. Hot temperatures will persist over central and northern California and the Pacific Northwest, and that is through the rest of today. It is a Tuesday morning. It is June 16th. Father's Day is coming up, and a really happy Father's Day to all those dads out there. Right now, it is 3 minutes past the hour, and we need to check the news for you on a Tuesday. So let's get started here on EWTN's Radio Extra. In France, President Trump speaking out on the efforts to end the war with Iran.
We have our deal done with Iran. And it should be successful. It goes to a second stage, which I think will be actually easier.
Following a meeting with leaders of Qatar on the sidelines of the G7 summit in France today, Trump telling reporters the U.S. would not be investing in Iran, despite what he called a rumor that got out there yesterday. He added the most important part of the deal is that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon. Exact details of the agreement have yet to be made public, but according to reports, it will open the Strait of Hormuz and open a 30-day window to strike a long-term deal. The U.S. military planning to maintain its current presence in the Middle East as officials negotiate with Iran, according to reports from The Hill, a senior Trump administration official saying, we do hope to draw them down, but we're not doing that yet. The official explained the administration wants to see the Iranians keep their promises and added the agreement contemplates a reduction of military forces in the region upon the agreement of the final deal and the signing. The comments follow news of an electronically signed memorandum of understanding that Trump just mentioned between President Trump and Vice President Vance on the U.S. side, the U.S. side, and the Iranian parliament on the other side. And it was revealed yesterday, a big story breaking, that the FBI thwarted an explosive drone attack on Sunday's UFC Freedom 250 event on the White House South Lawn, and they've already taken five people into custody. The multi-phase terror attacks allegedly involved using explosive-laden drone aircraft to strike buildings in the vicinity of the event, sparking mass panic, and then driving the fleeing crowd toward a sniper team poised to shoot them. That's what officials told Fox News Digital. A second wave of attackers then allegedly planned to storm the White House gate. The Bureau learned of the plot on June 10th and executed a search warrant in Cincinnati, where the first arrest was made. Some of the alleged suspects traveled to Virginia on June 12th or 13th to make preparations for the attack. Eight people are dead after a B-52 bomber crashed at Edwards Air Force Base in California. The base saying it happened shortly after the aircraft took off yesterday for a routine test mission. While the cause of the crash remains under investigation, Colonel James Hayes, who's a deputy commander for the 412th Test Wing, told a news conference, "We lost eight great Americans." And Vatican News reporting today, the Holy Father met with representatives of the United Jewish Appeal Federation of New York, thanking the organization for working to help vulnerable populations and stressing that in a world still wounded by division and conflict, we're still called to move beyond past misunderstandings toward collaboration for the common good.
recognizing the inherent dignity of all men and women, Nostra Aetate took a firm stand against anti-Semitism and declared that the Church rejects all forms of discrimination or harassment because of race, color, condition of life, or religion.
Pope Leo XIV gave this reminder when meeting with the representatives of the United Jewish Appeal Federation of New York on Monday morning in the Vatican. The organization's humanitarian efforts, Pope Leo said, reflect a clear recognition of human dignity and fraternity, resonating with the Church's own commitment to integral human development and the call to love our neighbor. He recalled that this shared commitment carries special meaning in light of the common history of Christians and Jews and their spiritual ancestry in Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. The Holy Father pointed to the 1965 landmark document of the Second Vatican Council, the Declaration Nostra Aetate, on the relation of the Church to non-Christian religions, whose 60th anniversary the Church celebrated last year. The Pope said it opened up a new horizon of encounter, respect, and spiritual hospitality, and affirmed, among other things, the truth that we belong to one human family. He recalled how it condemned anti-Semitism and discrimination.
In a world still wounded by division and conflict,
Pope Leo emphasized,
it called us to move beyond past misunderstandings toward collaboration for the common good.
With this sentiment, Pope Leo went on to describe service to the poor, marginalized, and powerless as a means of encountering the sacred, noting that, through them, the divine voice continues to speak to us. As the Holy Father drew his address to a close, he thanked those before him for their dedication to assisting the poor and needy, for confronting hatred and intolerance, and working to build a better world for all.
May your mission strengthen dialogue, deepen mutual understanding, and contribute to the peace so greatly needed in our world.
I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
The Vatican releasing the Holy Father's message for the 6th World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly to be held on the 4th Sunday of July. The theme, I Will Never Forget You, from Isaiah 49:15. Through the prophet Isaiah, the Lord promises that he will never forget any of us. He assures us that he has engraved our faces on the palms of his hands, and his love is greater than a mother's love for her child. The Pope acknowledged that quite a few elderly people share the painful feeling of being forgotten, especially as they experience loneliness or sometimes being reduced to a bed number or illness. Pope Leo said the celebration of the World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly is an opportunity to rediscover that the Church is called to be a mother to all, and that at any age, it's always possible to recognize ourselves as sons and daughters of God. The Holy Father also inviting everyone, especially the young, to revive the beautiful custom of visiting their grandparents, elderly relatives, and even those who have no one to visit them. Bring them through this message and your presence, the closeness and affection of the Pope, he said, as he called on loved ones to offer their grandparents and their elderly loved ones a tender and affectionate encounter. Sam Brock tells us a barrage of severe storms expected to hit millions across the country this week. He tells us it comes as a region experienced a weekend of wild weather already in the Midwest.
Trying to make it to safety through the storm. Down trees and power lines littering the streets. Rain also wreaking havoc in Texas. The water rising quickly on the roads. Flash floods trapping cars.
Lots of bad weather coming up. The latest weather threat is expected to start tomorrow with gusty winds and hail to hit parts of Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan, Chicago, Indianapolis, and Detroit, among the cities that might be affected. Later in the week, the severe weather threat expected, as you heard, to move into New York City, Washington, and other East Coast locations. And the National Hurricane Center says the first named tropical storm of the season could be brewing. The agency says a disturbance over northeastern Mexico has a 50% chance of development over the next week. Once it moves over the Gulf late today or tomorrow, environmental conditions slightly favor its development, and the system is expected to move east toward Louisiana. It will become, if it becomes a tropical storm late tomorrow or Thursday, the name will be Arthur. Accused CEO killer Luigi Mangione will be back in a courtroom in New York today for a hearing. This after news came the judge in the case held a secret hearing earlier in the month without explanation, and no reason has been given for today's hearing either. Mangione is charged in the murder of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, on a New York City sidewalk in 2024. He's set to go on state trial September 8th. A federal trial is set for 2027. And Wendy Swanson tells us Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell is still hospitalized.
A statement from McConnell's office says he was admitted on Sunday morning and, quote, is receiving excellent care. The reason for his hospitalization and his current condition are still both unknown. The 84-year-old Republican has represented Kentucky in the U.S. Senate since 1984. I'm Wendy Swanson.
The chief engineer of the cargo ship that caused the collapse of Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge has now been charged. He's facing a federal charge of violating the Ports and Waterways Safety Act. A deferred prosecution agreement has been reached, meaning the charge could be dismissed if he complies with certain terms. Prosecutors allege he knowingly and willfully failed to notify the U.S. Coast Guard about hazardous conditions before the 2024 collapse that killed six road workers. And Chris Caraggio tells us a national poll out yesterday finds phone tracking is following many children well into adulthood.
The University of Michigan Health Poll says 52% of parents track the location of adult children between the ages of 18 and 25. Most say they do it for safety or emergencies. Nearly one in four parents who track their adult kids say checking the app makes them anxious. And researchers say constant tracking can also get in the way of young adults learning to manage their own lives. I'm Chris Caraggio.
And the organizing committee for the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles will begin accepting volunteer applications next month, more specifically on July 14th. LA28 is encouraging people from around the world to apply. About 60,000 people will make up the volunteer crew. The Olympic volunteer period will run from March through August of 2028. Each volunteer will be expected to commit up to a minimum of 10 shifts. 13 minutes past the hour. What about that gospel today? And loving our enemies and praying for those who persecute us. We'll take a look at that through the eyes of John Paul II and also connected to a very big recent news story. Stay tuned. Back, Catholic Connection. Hope you're having a beautiful day. It is a Tuesday. It is June 16, 2026. And of course, the gospel for today is a very challenging one, as it should be. I mean, what's the old saying that Jesus came to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable? And I think sometimes all of us, myself included, get way too comfortable. And we need to be reminded that we are called to be challenged and stretched outside of our comfort zones. And I do think that the gospel for today certainly does that. So let me grab the gospel. If you recall, if you haven't done your morning readings yet, it is all about forgiveness and praying for those who persecute us. So let's take a listen, okay? And it is from the gospel for today, is from the gospel of Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your heavenly Father. For he makes his sun rise on the bad and the good, and he causes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what recompense will you have? Do not the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brothers only, what is unusual about that? Do not the pagans do the same? So be perfect, just as your heavenly Father is perfect." Now, no one is saying this is easy. It is certainly a challenge, especially depending on the severity of what may have been done to you by someone, and it's really tough to forgive them, and you kind of have to move toward that. That's why, thanks be to God, we have the sacrament of reconciliation. But I think oftentimes we may have an incorrect idea about forgiveness, being that we think, and I'm just speaking for my own challenges that I've had with this, that if we forgive someone, then we're letting them off the hook. They're getting away with whatever they did to us. There's no justice. But that's not true. We are all called to forgive, right? The Lord's Prayer reminds us of that. We have to forgive. That is mandated by our Lord, okay? But it doesn't mean that justice isn't supposed to occur. John Paul II, in his World Day of Peace for 2002, which is not that long after, of course, the 9/11 terrorist attacks, addressed this whole issue. And I'll get into that a little bit more after the clip that we're going to play. But he stressed that forgiveness is not the opposite of justice. So justice still must happen when you forgive. You have to forgive, but then justice must also occur for there to be the whole balance here. And sometimes we don't see the justice. Sometimes, obviously, we may not even know about it until we get to heaven. But it's not that justice doesn't occur or need to occur. It's that it may not occur in our timing, which can be very, obviously, for many reasons, even more hurtful and frustrating, but something with which we have to deal. I do think the story of the stabbing death of the young man from Texas, Austin Metcalf, and the response of his family, obviously they're very traumatized and they lost their son, but as Christians, they are talking about the fact that they need to forgive and how forgiveness is the only thing that is going to bring about peace. So let's take a listen. Obviously, this is a father who is very torn up, but at the end of the day, he does talk about forgiveness.
As Anthony now begins paying the price for his conviction, Austin Metcalf's father tonight is talking only with our J.D. Miles about the price that his family is paying.
Because the lie is temporary, but the truth lasts forever.
Jeff Metcalf finally had a chance to read the words he's been writing in a notebook to address his son's killer.
He said, people think that grief is sadness, but it's not. It's rage.
Oh.
Pure, unfiltered rage. You failed yourself. You failed your parents. You failed society. You don't belong in this community.
That's correct.
Metcalf's victim impact statement came at the end of Carmelo Anthony's murder trial. For months, the father of Austin Metcalf has been silenced by a gag order imposed by the judge. Now he's free to speak publicly and says he's also free of something else.
When I woke up this morning, it was a very different feeling. When I woke up, I felt like a million pounds had been lifted off my shoulders. Because I used to wake up every morning with this anxiety, with this feeling of dread. And this morning was the first day I woke up with a feeling of peace, comfort, tranquility that I haven't experienced in 14 months. And I felt Austin.
Metcalf was in court every day of Anthony's trial. The 19-year-old, now convicted murderer, not only took his son Austin's life, he did it right in front of Austin's twin brother, Hunter.
What killed me was the body cam footage when I could hear Hunter screaming. Oh God, my brother, my twin. You know, as a parent, you always want to protect your kids. And to hear my son and the fear in his voice, and I'm not there to fix it.
What was it like sitting in that courtroom with Carmelo Anthony for 5 or 6 days?
Challenging is the first word that comes to my mind. And I'll even say this, I had a little bit of sorrow because I'm human. And that poor boy is fixing to experience a life that I would not wish upon anyone.
Metcalf says even today he's received death threats and has previously endured doxing of his personal information and multiple swatting calls to his house from people who he says have tried to villainize Austin and the family.
I would hope they take a look in the mirror. And if you have children, and if it was your child who was murdered, would you like people dragging his name through the mud, making memes, making jokes, and just really vile comments?
Where do you and the Metcalf family go from here?
Well, I mean, this is day one of a long healing process. Because honestly, it's been impossible to start healing until this trial was complete.
The trial may be over, but the racial polarization among Americans, on display outside the Collin County Courthouse, continues.
Look at the effect, not just the effect here between the Metcalf family and the Anthony family. Look what it did, one, to those kids they have to live with. Two, it took on this huge, wider, let's have a race war throughout the nation.
Metcalf insists that his son had no racist motives when he approached Anthony about leaving a track team tent.
This case was never about race.
There's going to be those people now that just, you know, try to throw shade on the whole trial with the jury makeup and the speed of it and that sort of thing. I mean,
well, those are the same people that said he was jumped by four people. His phone was broken. You're going to spin whatever story to try to keep yourself afloat.
Metcalf believes Anthony should have received a life sentence. He says if Anthony is up for parole in 17 years, he will be there in some form to argue against it.
If I'm still alive, yes, I will be there in person. If not, I am going to make a video, if I'm passed on, that can be played.
There are no walls in Metcalf's home without photos or paintings of Austin and his twin. These images and a scholarship in his son's name are what remain for this father, who says he's ready to finally forgive, but not forget.
But people need to understand about forgiveness. Forgiveness was not for him. Forgiveness was for me, so I don't carry the rage, the hate, and that around. It will eat me up like cancer.
Yeah, and that's what he's talking about, and that's why forgiveness is setting yourself free. And forgiveness, again, as John Paul II said, does not come without justice. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It is a Tuesday morning. It is June 16th, and we are going to go to the beautiful shrine in Hanceville, Alabama. If you have never been there, I'm telling you, it is a thing of beauty, a place of peace, and you need to go. Chris McCarthy is with us again. He is the outreach manager of the Shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament. And Chris, tell us the good news about the At the Well Women's Retreat. I guess it's sold out, right?
Yeah, it's all sold out. Yeah, and we had a registration ongoing for the last couple of months, and we had 70 spots, and I think we filled it up probably as fast as we ever did for this retreat. So we're very happy about that. We're excited to have so many young ladies come and join us for a day of prayer centered around the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
and in the presence of Jesus Christ. And
that's awesome.
Thankful for
Let's
that.
Talk then, since that's filled, we have room, though, at your next adoration event, the Adoration Sodality, which occurs on the third Thursday of each month, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we have plenty of room. You know, so we invite everyone to come on by. It'll be this Thursday, a couple days, and we have a really good celebrant and speaker. We always have good ones, but this is really a good one. Father Ignatius John Schweitzer, who's the Dominican lady spiritual director for St. Joseph Seminary, in Yonkers, New York. So he hasn't been a speaker here in the past. He has run a couple of retreats for the Poor Clare Nuns, but I believe this is his first time doing the Adoration Sodality. So we're very, very excited to have him. We're very fortunate to have him speak in we can't wait to see what he'll share in terms of Jesus in the Most Blessed Sacrament.
So tell us, what is Adoration Sodality, if people are just hearing this for the first time?
Yeah, sure, in a nutshell. It was established by the Four Clares of Perpetual Adoration here about 4 years ago, and it's a worldwide religious prayer group. We have members in all 50 states and 30 countries, and it's basically to spiritually join the Poor Clares in their mission, their primary mission of adoring the body, blood, soul and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ in the Holy Eucharist, and pray in communion with them in the mission of reparative thanksgiving for mankind's outrages against God. And it's basically a support system for I like how St. Clair of Assisi put it, support system for our Catholic brothers and sisters, you know, which in today's world is not only welcome but necessary. So we're asking folks to join us in being apostles of the Holy Eucharist and setting aside at least one day a month in adoration in the presence of the.
So how did this all start there in terms of having this on a regular basis? Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, not at all. How did it start? Well, it basically, like I mentioned, the Poor Clare nuns, their mission is promoting the promotion of the Holy Eucharist and extension of that Eucharistic adoration. And they wanted to find a way to kind of go beyond their walls of the monastery and let allow other people to join them in their Eucharistic adoration. And not only it's basically you take your Eucharistic adoration hours and join with them in reparative thanksgiving, and it you don't have to do anything extra. You know, no matter how many hours of Eucharistic adoration you do, you just use that and share it with the nuns and the rest of the adoration sodality members, and kind of like the power of prayer times 12. You can picture that.
Yeah. Have you found that this has become more popular, Chris, with the additional attention that we're getting on the Eucharist, with the Eucharistic Congress, all the Eucharistic events, and now the Eucharistic procession that continues as we see all these wonderful people with the Eucharistic processions through the, you know, 13 original colonies, and things will be wrapping up close to 4th of July. Are you seeing an increased interest in Eucharistic adoration?
Yes, we are, absolutely. Our numbers in the Adoration Sodality membership have really seen a rise in that over the last, not few months, but actually the last several months. And we think the processions and the adoration and things that are going on of that nature had a lot to do with that. It's a wonderful thing, especially just so many young people are coming to realize how important Eucharistic adoration is, and how that can be a centerpiece of their lives. And yes, we're really seeing people not only in coming to the Adoration Sodality, but just, you know, coming either in group pilgrimage or visitors and saying, you know, we're here because we want to pray in front of the monstrance, and which is a beautiful thing. It really is. And the shrine is centered around the Eucharist. Everything here is centered around the Eucharist with the nuns' mission, but the most important thing is, of course, offering our prayers in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And we're really seeing an uptick in that, which is a wonderful thing. And I don't see that quote unquote trend line going down anytime soon. I see even more participation in visitors.
What's it like for you to have these repeated opportunities? I mean, you're right there where it's all happening, and so you've got, you know, Jesus with you all the time. I mean, Jesus is always with us, and he's in the churches and whatnot. We get that. But when adoration, so much adoration is available, that's got to be very special on a personal level.
Oh, it's very special. Before I began working here about 60 months ago, I, of course, did in my hour a Eucharistic adoration, but it wasn't too consistent. And when I got when I arrived here at the shrine, just having that the beautiful temple they have with the beautiful 7-foot monstrance, and just having the opportunity to go you know, once or twice a day, or you know, even more than that, just to have that opportunity, knowing that if I feel the need, or if the Spirit moves me, I just can just walk across the piazza and just offer it all up to the Lord. And it's really changed my life in a very special way, a very personal way, not only spiritually, but in all other aspects of my life. And it's just, it's hard to describe in words, how blessed I am to be a part of it and have that, and like I said, in proximity with me. And and best thing about it, I get to share it with people about in our adoration sodality to come by to be a witness for it.
And so the conference is sold out. When will the next retreat for young women be? Before we let you go, we have about a minute left.
Sure, real quick. The next retreat is just about 2 weeks after that. It's our St. Clair retreat, and what that is, as opposed to the At the Well being a Eucharistic retreat, the St. Clair Come and See retreat is for a limited number of young ladies who are actually actively discerning a religious vocation.
Okay.
And so the nuns, they get to stay over a few nights in the proximity to the monastery, and they get to speak with the nuns through the cloister and really go in depth about where God is leading them in that direction or not.
Wow. That's awesome. Chris, thanks. Always so encouraging and great to catch up with you. I want to direct people to the beautiful website for the Shrine. It is simply olamshrine.com. There you go. And you can check it out or just do a search for Shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament in Hanceville. Yeah, we're hearing all kinds of stories about media influence and how some people are finally waking up. There are several countries that have banned social media for younger people. Just yesterday, there was a big story out of the UK regarding just that. So the topic this morning with our guest, Nicholas Sens, with the Colby Academy, Homeschool Academy, has to do with choosing authentic Catholic education in the age of AI. And Nicholas, I would think in addition to AI, all the media influences we have out there can really form our children as opposed to letting us form them. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. So tell us first of all about the Colby Academy before we let you answer that question so people know where to find you.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Well, Colby Academy is an online school which also has homeschool options, asynchronous options, live online options. We have a variety of ways that we deliver our authentically Catholic, classical, customizable home-based school. We partner with families, remembering always that parents are the primary educators of their children. We are cooperating with them and to help to form their children to be faithful in the world that they are going to launch into.
All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Now you can go ahead and answer my initial question. Go ahead.
No worries. I appreciate the opportunity for the plug. No worries.
Sure.
So, you're absolutely right. Pope Leo has mentioned this in his first encyclical that we recently got to read, where he talked not only about AI, which we know has been a big concern of his from the beginning. He mentioned it, concerns about AI, as one of the reasons that he chose his regnal name of Pope Leo, calling back to Pope Leo XIII, who faced a lot of new things, right? Rerum novarum on new things in his own time. And that we are facing a lot of new challenges related to technology in our own day, not only with AI, but with social media, with all of these ways that these new digital technologies affect the way that we consume information, the way that we process information, the way that we see ourselves and interact with other people. So all of these new technologies are absolutely a major challenge for us to face, to ensure that we can hang on to our humanity as we try to deal with these different technologies.
How would we explain what Catholic formation is and what it isn't? What do you think?
What it is and what it isn't. That's a good way to put it. Always good to have kind of a foil there. Catholic education is focused on forming a person according to the truths that we know that we have revealed to us in the Catholic faith. So keeping those core principles at our center, that human beings are made in the image and likeness of God, that we are made ultimately for the purpose of communion with God, that the world that we are in, that God has placed us, is in itself good, but is a secondary good to God himself. And so the world can tell us about God, the world can glorify God, but we can also, if we focus too much on the things of this world and place them on the top of the ladder, then we can miss what is our ultimate good, which is God himself. So everything within a Catholic education, every approach to every discipline, whether that's English literature or science or mathematics or whatever it might be, is all has that at its center, is seeing the world through a Catholic lens, you might say.
Yeah, I think that's super important. It's so difficult to try and do actual work without AI influence. I mean, every time you do a search for anything, all these different summaries come up and Copilot and all of this, and that's got to have an impact on education, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's all too tempting for a student who's just trying to do some basic research, even looking at the meaning of a word, and then they have come up at the top of their search there a little AI-generated summary, and you have to teach them what things you can use, what things you can't use. At what point is this AI agent doing the work for you? And so this is a big part of our approach at Colby Academy in instructing our students and trying to combat this problem, because all of our students are human, and some of them fall to the temptation to have an AI agent write a paper for them. So in addition to our kind of post-facto detection attempts to try to ferret out if a paper may have been written by AI, we're also trying a preventative approach, very much wrapped up in our focus on virtue and formation in virtue, mm-hmm. reminding our students that the purpose of an assignment is not just to get it done, but that the doing of the assignment itself is part of the goal. And doing the process of thinking, of organizing, of wrestling with different texts and thinking through them is part of the purpose of producing the assignment, so that even if a student makes a mistake and we catch them using AI, we have them do the assignment over again, even if they're not getting any points for it, because mm-hmm. we are reiterating to them that the purpose is to do the assignment. And so we still want them to get that formative experience of doing the assignment. So that
Absolutely.
Emphasis on
mm-hmm.
virtue is very much at the center of our approach.
We are speaking with Nicholas Sens, the head of the theology department for Colby Academy. The website is colby.org. Colby Academy is an authentically Catholic, as you heard, classical and customizable home-based school serving families around the world through live online classes, flexible courses, and support for traditional homeschooling families. So if they go to the website, they find all of this information, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And in terms of Maximilian Kolbe, by the way, is one of my favorites because he knew how to embrace the media and to use it wisely. What a great example for you at your academy.
Exactly. Yep. And we, of course, have a great focus on St. Maximilian Kolbe. And the students know his story, that he used the technologies of his time to be able to combat the evils of his time and also to, you know, work towards the good. And he is a good reminder to us that technology is a tool that can be used for a variety of purposes. Using a tool well can glorify God. It can achieve an end well. But using a tool poorly can be counterproductive. A chainsaw is very good for cutting wood. It's not good for cutting your toenails. That would be counterproductive. So teaching our students about the proper use of a tool and asking those deeper questions. What is it I'm trying to achieve? What is this tool for? Is it helping me or is it doing the work for me? If I started up a treadmill and then set a robot on it to run it, I can't then say, well, I ran on the treadmill. No, I didn't. The robot ran on the treadmill.
I would like to say that. That would be nice if I could do
that. Wouldn't it be? But the robot running on the treadmill isn't going to get me any healthier.
Exactly.
Just so an AI agent writing a paper for me isn't going to make me any smarter or any wiser or any more virtuous.
Very true. So how large now in terms of numbers? What's your outreach in terms of the academy?
Oh, gosh. That is a number I should have had handy to me. We have students all over the country. We even have international students. I've had students in class from the Philippines, from Spain, from countries in South America. So we've got a very wide reach, and we've been growing in the last several years.
How did this all begin?
How did the School of Colby begin?
Yeah, how did the Holy Academy mm-hmm. start? Whose idea was it?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, it started out actually as a brick-and-mortar school in California, and then expanded out to a home school that would mail out paper texts and syllabi to families. And then several years ago, we started the online version of the school. So we've been expanding in different directions, trying to serve families and help them to bring a Catholic education to their children in all kinds of different ways and formats that work for them.
What kind of feedback? I imagine you've gotten very good feedback over the years since you've been operating.
Yeah, we've been very blessed to hear from families how much we've affected them. Hearing from students how much their theology classes have really helped them to grow in their faith, which is so important to us, and especially for us in the theology department, that we don't just want to fill their heads with facts about God, but we want to help them to come to know God. You know, St. Thomas talks about the difference between knowing about God and knowing God. I tell the students, mm-hmm. it's like going onto somebody's Facebook page. You could learn a lot about them, but you don't actually know them
know
yet.
Them.
So I tell
right.
them, we don't want to stalk God. We want to actually come to know God.
Yeah.
And we've heard from students how often our classes have helped them to come to know God better and deepen in their faith.
Is it difficult? Because most of this is taught online, correct? Is some in person, or is it all online?
We have a couple of different varieties of ways to do the school. So some is the homeschool or a digital homeschool. There are asynchronous courses where students are watching recorded lectures. And then there's mm-hmm. the live online option where students are in a digital classroom with teachers like myself lecturing to them, and they're interacting with each other, you know, over a microphone, over video, in chat boxes, things like that. So it can be a bit of an adjustment, both for teachers and students, moving into that digital space. But you know, we work very hard to really build a community mm-hmm. in those digital spaces.
So how do you do that? How do you go about building a community?
Interact with our students and try to share on a personal level and mm-hmm. Engage with them, really get to know them. I always love every year getting to know my students and asking them about themselves and finding out our students are, you know, competitive musicians or athletes, or some of them tell us, oh, I'm writing a novel. Great, tell us about that. And, mm-hmm. You know, taking even those few minutes in class time to share about ourselves and really get to know each other. Even if we are thousands of miles apart physically, we can still get to know each other in those ways.
I think it's so important to help young people, and I'm giving a long talk next week for the EW Chin Summer Academy to young journalists, and I really want to impress upon them that these are the best of the best. The cream of the crop get chosen for this, mm-hmm. so they're probably already like your students in the sense, but to really appreciate the research and the ability to step away and think and connect the dots. As you say, not just information. Okay, why is this way? What happens? And where do we go from here? To have that thought process, being able to have a thought process is huge. And there's a lack of that today.
Well, absolutely. And this is something we emphasize in our courses. And again, especially in theology, where we are frequently referring back to St. Thomas Aquinas. And I'll remind the students, St. Thomas, say, in the Summa Theologiae, he is presenting objections, counter-arguments, and mm-hmm. he is presenting them in the strongest possible way to say, someone who, say, opposes the church's position, well, why do they? What are their reasons? And again, he presents that in a steel man way, not in a straw man way, and then responds to it. So walking our students through that, I remind them, this is the way that you have to engage with others, engage with the world. When you hear a contrary opinion, you don't just dismiss it. You have to think through, why does this person think differently? And find out, say, where the error in reasoning is, or where the false premise is, where the misunderstanding is. And then you not only understand the other person better, but understand yourself and your own position better. And you can grow in wisdom, rather than just simply reflexively dismissing something. You
right.
can actually grow in wisdom that way.
Yeah, and I mean, in this world, we just see people, if they disagree, they have a disagreement of opinion, then they just walk away, or worse. So super important. Thank you so much for this. Okay, how do we get all the information we need about the Colby Academy? Just go to the website?
Yeah, we've got everything there on the website, colby.org. You can find out about our curricula. We've got descriptions and backgrounds on all of our instructors. Yep, everything you need would be right there, and we have our friendly staff who is reachable by phone or email to give you more information.
All right. Well, it's a great conversation. Thanks for all you do, Nicholas Sens, Theology Department Chair of Colby Academy, and again, colby.org. We'll be right back to let you know what's coming up on a Wednesday edition of Catholic Connection. Thank you so much for tuning in to hour number two, or as we say in Italy, due on a Tuesday. It is June 16th. Tomorrow on a Wednesday, we will go to Rome with our dear sister, excuse me, Joan Lewis, and we'll talk about the Holy Father's schedule, all the great things he said about grandparents, and I'm sure she'll have an update on the audience, which will be tomorrow as well. And then we're also going to be talking about Donna Rice Hughes and her response to what's happening in the UK with this new ban on social media. She's with the ministry Enough is Enough, and they take a look at media influence on children. She's got some great thoughts on this. And then we're also going to talk to her about a new program for parents regarding cell phone usage. So this would be really cool and really helpful. So Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, which is based on my book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, or I should say books, because the second one is out today. Yay, so excited, from EWTM Publishing. It's the June Book of the Month. It is Italy's Shrines and Wonders, Volume 2, Discovering Sacred Spaces and Fascinating Places in the Life of St. Francis of Assisi. We'll mention the book, but I want to talk to you about something really fun that's going on in a town near us where they have a palio based on rolling giant wine barrels up and down the streets. I am not kidding you. It is the funniest thing to see, but it's a big competition. Already about a week ago, they started hanging up all of their regional flags, or the Rione, the different colors. And men and women compete, and they dress in medieval costumes, and they roll these giant empty wine barrels up and down the hills. It's a big deal here in central Italy. One of the many fun things about living here part-time are all the cool festivals. More on that tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday, and we'll talk to you on a Wednesday. Ciao, ciao.